It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 21st day of April 2022. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia, madcap extravaganza that is The Horn chat room during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the Great Globe Round. And, you know, whatever time it is when you listen to the podcast, which is available on most all podcast platforms. Hi, I'm Robin. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday, as we get closer to wrapping up this week, and after yesterday's conversation with Scott in San Diego, yes, really, today is Thursday. Not Friday, not Wednesday. It's Thursday. Okay? Just to be clear about all of that. And, of course, every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude. Wait a minute. No, I forgot something. If you pop by the aforementioned Merry Madcap, Wacky, Zany, Real Time, etc., you will be greeted by early arrivers Roger in Oregon and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third stage guild navigator, has declined to fold space to become Man Cave. And he is capably assisted by pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan, who is celebrating, yes, his birthday today. Happy birthday, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan. Happy 58th birthday and many, many, many happy returns, and thank you so much for everything you do as part of this happy little community that he does so much to help create. I hope you and Ms. Karen do something delightful and birthday-ish this evening, and that it's one of the best birthdays that you've ever had, Steve. Steve! Yeah. And hopefully you didn't get your birthday off to a miserable start by checking in with the denizens of Bedlam over at Washington Journal. Oh, my God. Now, every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So, consequently, we send out thanks to our 21st day of the month subscribers via PayPal, and what that means is we say thank you to Karen. Thank you, Karen. And thank you to Harold, President and CEO of Sochtris, the secret open carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Thank you both for helping to keep all the plates spinning on all the sticks that is the little independent liberal broadcast media experiment that is The Horn. Now, let's see. Let's get this thorn in the side Thursday started in regular order, shall we? And by the way, Lee in New York says the obligatory Hitchhiker's reference. This must be Thursday, said Arthur to himself, sinking lower over his beer. I never could get the hang of Thursdays. Yeah, I can't. Going all the way back to my misspent youth and my college days, Thursdays were, back then, when we were all just carefree and whatnot, Thursdays were actually the beginning of the weekend. But no more. The weekend will begin sometime around, probably 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time for me tomorrow. I've been on the road today. As noted, I got to I drove to Charleston today. And I got up really early this morning because, got all tidied up and did my makeup and felt cute and drove down to Charleston and then way up into the hinterlands of North Charleston to the printers. And I picked up my yard signs, and I picked up my car door magnets, and they are gorgeous. And I'm so excited to start putting them out this weekend. A dear, dear friend of mine, I got two sets of car door magnets, one for my car, and a dear friend of mine has offered to put them on her car and just sort of drive proudly around the 51st House District of Fayette County and just help get the word out about my candidacy. I'll put up a post at Zuckerbook and over on Twitter, but for right now, if you'd like to see the signs as they exist, I do have a post there on Instagram so far. I love the color scheme that our dear friend Tara designed and put together. She has a beautiful touch with graphics. She's so incredibly talented, and I'm so grateful to her for bringing. You know, I just told her what I thought it should look like, and then there it was. And I've got 50 of them, and it would be, I'd love to have 150 of them, but right now the funds aren't there, so we'll make the best of the situation. Yeah, I know, Billable. Billable Rex says, Robin, stop telling us what day it is. Isn't it still 420? Dude, here. Sure it is. It's always 420 somewhere. Smooth. Jude says, oh, dear Steve, yes, may an especially tender celebration moment visit you today on this your birthday. A special hello always to you and Miss Karen. Warmly, Jude. And oddly enough, today, in my photographic memories, my iPad decided to show me photos of the Molloy Mountain getaway of June of, God, how long ago was that? It was a long time ago. But it was, I saw Jude, I saw Steve and Karen, I saw Molloy, I saw Molly, and a lot of the attendees there, and that humongous spread of food that, 2019, Steve, 2019, that seems about right. Steve says, thanks, Jude, that's very kind, and it is, and Jude is. Meanwhile, we have, of course, Joey's Journal. This is one of those days that I'll never forget, April 21st, 2016, considering what happened 6 years ago on this date. As many of you know, if you followed the journal, I was a caregiver for my dearly departed friend Richard, who lived in a very nice condominium in Northwest Akron. I practically lived with him at the condo as I was there more than I was at my actual home. In the fall of 2015, a lovely woman and her very elderly husband moved into a neighboring condo. I was in my mid-50s at the time, and this woman appeared to be in her mid-40s as she was youthful and attractive. On the other hand, her husband appeared to be 80 years old if he was a year, and I initially wondered if he was her father. Later, I discovered that they assumed Richard was my father. She dressed very well, and when she would get all dolled up, she was stunning. Generally, I couldn't have cared less about her because she was obviously obsessed with the appearance, and I was not. Well, that's kind of what... Well, never mind. There's nothing wrong with desiring to look desirable. She went way overboard with the process. Not comfortable with that. I never said a word to the woman because she appeared to me to crave the attention that I'm sure she often received from her stunning appearance. Wow, come on, we gotta do better. Women try to look good, not for other people, but for themselves, because there are societal pressures at work about appearance. And, I mean, just believe me on this. However, when I did see her in the garage of the condo, I would always look her way and shake my head but not whisper a word. I was amazed by something associated with her, but it was not her. It was the incredible car that she drove. It was an amazing blue car that had a bee on the front with wings. I had no idea what kind of car it was. Oh, I do. But it was amazing. I'm not a car aficionado, so I had no idea what it was. We'd often come and go in and out of the garage, passing one another, but never engaging. I would just smile and look over her way at that amazing car, and she thought I was looking at her. Are we mind-reading now? After several months, I approached her and said, "Wow, you have a really nice car." I barely made eye contact and just walked away very quickly without introducing myself or making any attempt to be neighborly. Every time I would see her in the garage from that point on, I'd always say in this seductive voice, "Hey, nice car." I never introduced myself or said anything else to that woman until one day she came home and the car was a filthy mess. I approached her and said, "Hey, Jean, is this the way you treat a car? This is considered car abuse, and you could get a ticket for this." She looked at me in a stunned manner with real concern and inquired how I knew her name. I looked over at one of her real estate signs that she'd propped up against the wall with a sense of relief. She just smiled and was no longer concerned that I might be a stalker. She mentioned that she'd been showing a home in a rural area and the car encountered some mud. Then I gently scolded her and told her, really, we're scolding? Told her that's no way to treat a beautiful car. I couldn't have cared less about her, but I really did want to drive that car. So about 9 that night, I went down to the garage, and as luck would have it, the car was parked right by a water faucet with a hose attached. I grabbed one of Richard's buckets with a sponge, and in about an hour, that car looked brand new. You know, this was about to happen. Here's the giraffe. Joey, are you sure it was just the car you wanted? Jeffrey! Lord God. The male gaze. Gee, Jeffrey, thanks for asking. Yeah, I'm sure. It was all about the car, not about the cats. Like clockwork, she'd always walk up and down the garage floor for some exercise, and I'd often run down in the garage for the same purpose. If you went down to one end of the garage and back 11 times, it was a mile. So the next morning, I made sure I was down there exercising, and she was as well. She did the most amazing double take when she noticed her car was all cleaned up. She then looked at me and point blank asked me why I washed her car, and I gave her a point blank blunt answer. "Look, Gene, I'm really not into you, and I'm not really into cars, but I'd like to get into this car." She was taken aback, as would I have been, by the direct response. Joey seems to think she was miffed that he wasn't making a pass at her, but she kept her composure and then said, "I don't even know your name." Then I said, "I don't know what kind of car this is, so no more secrets. I'm Joe." She then totally stunned me by telling me the car was a Bentley Continental GT worth about $200,000. Then she shocked me in a sarcastic, caustic, but sincere voice. "Hey, Joe, you want to go for a ride?" Without missing a beat, I replied, "Yeah, why don't you show me one of these million-dollar homes that you're trying to sell to pay off this beauty?" So that evening, she had a showing in LeBron's neighborhood of a home worth $750,000. We met in the garage, and she told me to get in the driver's seat, and I actually got to drive that car to the showing. That car had amazing horsepower and rode so smoothly. What a treat. As it turns out, the woman that I thought was shallow had quite a story to tell. As her first husband was killed in a car accident, she lost a home to foreclosure in 1998. This inspired her to go into real estate because she could make a lot of money and help guide people that had experienced what she did. She was and is actually 7 years older than me. and votes Democratic because of the help she received from the government back in the 90s when she was struggling. I was amazed at her age and how transparent she was. She was a really great lady. In 2017, she would leave the condo and move into a beautiful home not far from LeBron's. On the way back to the condo, we received the very sad news that Prince had passed away in his Paisley Park home up near Minneapolis. I remember that evening. We were both shocked as we reminisced about all his great music and artistic ability. As we drove by LeBron's home, I jokingly yelled, "Hey, LeBron, maybe if you win a championship in Cleveland, you can drive a car like this." Reality is LeBron probably has a dozen cars worth that and more. Ironically, just 2 months later, LeBron and the Cavs would win the NBA championship on Father's Day 2016. However, even more ironic, in September 2019, I went to Blaine, Minnesota, a suburb of Minneapolis, to visit my sister's grandchild, who made a great uncle out of me. That same weekend, I also visited Paisley Park, where Prince's home has been turned into a museum. Oh, look, there's Junior.
I thought they turned Prince's home into a symbol.
Junior, be quiet. As I was taking the tour of the museum, I could not help but think about that night back in April 2016 when my friend Jean and I heard that Prince had perished, all while driving her Bentley Continental GT. As the tour of Prince's museum came to an end, the final portion of the tour led you into a large area where there was a stage, and on the stage were a few of Prince's favorite cars that he drove. You could have knocked me over with a feather when I saw that one of Prince's favorite cars was none other than a 2006 Robin's Egg Blue-colored Bentley Continental GT. This has been Joey's Journal for Thursday, the 21st day of April, 2022, with Giraffe singing a little different version of Little Red Corvette called Little Blue Bentley. And there's a $25 Little Blue Bentley challenge on the table, which, if met, will take us down to $1,450 for our fundraising goal, meaning that we are trying to fundraise, let's see, today, Thursday, yesterday, Wednesday, Tuesday, Monday, and, Thursday, because there wasn't a show last Friday. We're trying to catch up with a week's worth of funding. We are fully funded up through last Wednesday. So, thanks, everybody, and hopefully the Little Blue Bentley Challenge will be met. Ralph says, "Darn, I can't remember your Instagram name. It's Robin for All of Us. RobinForAllOfUs. Robin for All of Us on Instagram." And like I said, after the program, I'm going to put up a post. Because there's more to the sign story than just the fact that I have signs. I talked a little bit about it, you know, yesterday. I am and always will be, always have been, pro-union. And I realized something when I picked those signs and magnets up today. In this primary season for this House district where I live, there are four candidates. There are two Democrats, I'm one of them, and there are two Republicans. Out of those four candidates, only one candidate made the effort to get the union bug put on her signs. That would be me. Yeah. Because that little union bug, you can barely, you probably can't even see it from the road. But it says something. It says a ton, in fact. It says that whoever it was that got those signs actually cares about working people and knows what a difference union membership makes for working families. And I'm the only one. I'm the only one. How about that? Well, making history. I'm the only lot of things in this race. The only trans woman in the entire state ever to have run for a seat in the state legislature. Lady B, by the way, says, nothing much to bitch about today. Really, what's the point? We know what to do. All of us do. We just have to rely on the silent majority to be horrified enough to get off their contented asses and do it. As Dan Fogelberg wrote, Love when you can, cry when you have to. Be who you must. That's a part of the plan. Await your arrival with simple survival. And one day, we'll all understand. Thank you, Lady B. With an editorial cartoon. A big old convertible car from the old, you know, basically the 50s, because they've got fins, labeled Florida. Math books are racist! And a car behind it chasing it. They's getting away! And a little sign in the air showing the Mickey Mouse symbol is a groomer. The sign at the front of the cartoon notes, race to be the most embarrassing state in the nation. Ain't that the damn truth? Nick Anderson, the cartoonist. Imagine using the power, the tremendous power of a state legislature to attack, wait for it, mathematics. It's kind of interesting. I saw a photo yesterday on my high school graduating class page, because we are anticipating, finally, this fall, a year late, getting to have our 40th high school graduation reunion. And somebody went rooting around in the yearbooks and found a picture, I guess from my senior year. Three girls from my graduating class and me. And we had a field trip that day to visit, a stock brokerage. I think it was A.G. Edwards & Sons, down on Court Street in Florence. And they showed us how the stock market works. You give them your money, then they take your money, and then you lose your money. That's how the stock market works. At least that's what my Depression-era parents said. Because, well, they were alive when the Republicans drove the stock market into the dirt. And so in that transmission of transgenerational wisdom, you know, I was reminded early and often by my grandmother, the Republicans promised us three meals a day, and they delivered. Oatmeal, skip a meal, and miss a meal. And you know what? It's still true. And by the way, I mentioned it on the air last week, and I left for Charleston this morning, and I stopped at the post office. I said, for some reason, I've got a certified letter from West Virginia Right to Work Committee that requires my signature. I thought about just letting it be returned to them. But I wanted to make sure that I could speak with authority about it. So I signed off, and they gave me my little letter. And per the discussion we had last week, yeah, it was just another candidate questionnaire. But the people who despise working people, the people who despise a fair wage for a fair day's work, spent $6.13 to send that to me, when they could have just used a first-class stamp and saved about, $5.50. Actually, more. Just don't want to cipher. And I pulled out their stupid little flyer, their stupid little questionnaire. Do you promise you will never vote to give working people any kind of a voice? Yes. No. Assholes. Jack-offs. Jerks. No. But that, I mean, and you know, this is, I take these little journeys, and I like to bring the Horn Family Community Congregation along with me. So yeah, I've seen the candidate questionnaire from the fetus fetishists. Meh. Threw that away. Oh, I was talking about, yeah. CRT, math and everything. So there's that picture from the yearbook, and there's four people in the picture. Three of the girls in my graduating class, and me. And I didn't do it, but I almost did some, I don't know, modern math. How many girls are in this picture? Because it's me, you know, closeted and everything. The answer is four. Because it looks like three, but it's actually four. Never mind. But anyway, you know, I got the Gun Humpers of America questionnaire. Man, that goes to the... And all of these right-wing organizations have enough money to set fire to a sopping wet herd of elephants with sopping wet $100 bills. But it tells you where the real money is. That West Virginia right to work has enough money to throw away at least $6 per candidate on every single candidate for every single seat in the West Virginia legislature. And that's like something like, you know, 135 seats when you take the Senate and the House together. 135 seats. Multiply that by however many candidates there are, because in most cases there will be a Republican and a Democrat. Some cases there won't. So then you've got at least $270. And so if we do our ciphering just on very vague numbers, 270 dot not not time six dot 13, that's $1,655.10 worth of postage. And if this was really an effective strategy, then everybody else would do it. Because whether it's the Republican fetus fetishists or the gun humpers or these people who are desperate to keep workers terrified and desperate, everybody would be doing that. But apparently this is the wealthiest outfit, or... Well, it's either the wealthiest or the stupidest in this state. I wonder if they pay shit wages to the people who work for them, too, just like they want everybody else in West Virginia to work. Shit wages. You know, they're tireless in their efforts to make sure that we don't have a minimum wage that you can live on. It was their efforts that got right to work in place of union shops. It was their efforts that helped to get rid of prevailing wages or prevailing wage laws in this state. And apparently it pays real good. Like, I don't know, when you think about something like a right to work, the first people I think of are the Koch brothers, and one of them reaching his cold, dead, moldering hand from beyond the grave to grasp at the throats of working people. I can't remember if that's Chuck or Dave. Oh, by the way, some Chuck and Dave news. It took long enough, but lo and behold, and what a surprise this is, Chuck and Dave... At one of them being dead. But, you know, Coke Industries, which first made its money, Pappy Coke, back before Chuck and Dave were even a twinkle in his eye, Pappy Coke made his fortune doing oil business with Joe the Georgian, you know, Stalin. And he became a rabid anti-communist when Joe didn't pay up everything that Pappy Coke said that he was owed. And so after Vladdy Daddy's attack on the innocent people of Ukraine, in which he has slaughtered, God alone knows how many tens of thousands of non-combatant Ukrainians. I don't think he's killed as many non-combatant Ukrainians as W killed non-combatant Iraqis, but that doesn't mean he isn't trying. He's just not as good at it as we were. But nonetheless, with the onset of this ongoing nightmare hellscape war, a number of American countries, or companies, I'm sorry, have gotten the hell out of Russia because they don't want to even remotely be perceived as supporting this bloodletting. Oh, but not Coke Industries. Oh, hell no. There's money to be had in Mother Russia. And we love us some money. And so they've been right there all along. Until now. Oh, thank you, Lee in New York. Here's how to remember which of the Koch brothers is pining for the fjords. No longer with us. Singing in the bleeding choir eternal. No, he's getting pineapples. Here's the way to remember. D as in dead, D as in David. Dave Koch is the dead Koch. Thank you. That's really going to be helpful, Lee. So Chuck is still around. Dave, however, is, pining for the fjords. But it looks like, according to Judd Legum over at Popular Info, sanctions, he writes, Guardian Glass, that's a Koch subsidiary, is it? Safe Light Repair, Safe Light Replace. Guardian Glass is finally getting out of Mother Russia. Sanctions announced in early April, combined with the Russian government's response and other actions, have made conditions untenable to continue operations in Russia. As a result, Guardian has asked its Russian employees to shut down the two glass plants. That was from Koch Industries CEO Dave, not Koch, Robertson. Well, I guess better late than never. Yet nonetheless, Dave Robertson tried to save face a little bit, saying, as a company, sorry, that's Giraffe's voice, but, well, he'll have to get over it. As a company and as individuals, we have consistently condemned Russia's action and remain united in support of all employees and others who are harmed by this terrible war, which we are somehow profiting from in one way or another, because fuck it all, we're Koch Industries. I added that last part. It took a while for the morals to kick in, I guess. As a result, Guardian asked its Russian employees to shut down the two glass plants. When made aware of this plan, Russian authorities repeated earlier warnings that local Guardian employees would violate Russian law and be prosecuted and imprisoned if they followed through with any shutdown activities, further reinforcing our concerns for employee safety.
Sure you were.
Because, you know, Koch Industries cares about employees.
Therefore, Guardian is working with its local management team to find an exit strategy that maintains our commitment to employee safety and does not result in the Russian government taking over the plants and financially benefiting from them. All other Koch companies, none with operating assets in Russia, have ended or are ending business activities there.
Yeah, sure. Oh, wait, that's good, too. Scott in San Diego, helping me remember which one's the dead Koch, says, Dave is the flat Koch. Oh, should I be laughing about that? Oh, they're Cokes. Why not? They're horrible people.
But Robin, we give money to the opera and PBS and stuff.
Yeah, that's Coke washing. Oh, by the way, Billable Rick has sent along a cowbell for Joey's excellent story. Well done. Well done, Billable. Well done, Joey. We're just going to work on the misogyny a little bit along the way. That's all. Just going. And look, it's internalized. It sometimes happens without even. Yeah. And maybe that was the point of Joey's story. He made assumptions about which he was entirely wrong. And then was able to learn better. Lee in New York says, your high school reunion. Hi, Robin. I will take a guess. No one's going to say to you, you haven't changed a bit. Yeah, I think Miss Terry and I are going to be vying for most changed. But, well, that'll be delightful. And, yeah. Talking about the union bug on my signs. Scott reminds us of, if you're of a certain age, you remember this very well. Nope, wrong button, Robin. Works better this way.
This is no import. We made this blouse. We belong to the International Ladies Garment Workers Union, and we have sewn our union label right in here.
Yeah, that's a goner. Because, well, we don't make a lot of clothing in the United States anymore. Thank you, NAFTA, and its progeny and successors. You know, unions tried to tell both Democrats and Republicans alike, this is just really a shitty idea. But, you know, back in the 90s, George W. Bush was a big fan of NAFTA. Bill Clinton was a big fan of NAFTA. Yeah, but all the jobs are going to... It'll be better for the world. And so, yeah. I mean, does the ILGWU even still exist?
It tells you we're able to do what every American wants to do, have a job doing honest work at decent wages. When you see the union label, think of us, making a living, making your clothes right here in America.
Look for the union label when you are buying a gold dress or love.
But you know what that ad also does? It speaks to the fact that once upon a time, unions understood the idea of messaging. Because those were ads that were paid to air on TV stations around the country. And people really did look for that union label. But, well, somewhere along the way, the idea of that kind of messaging just sort of fizzled. When's the last time you saw an ad for the United Auto Workers? I mean, even here in West Virginia, coal country, it's not like the TVs are awash in ads for only burn union coal. No, not that either. And you get the idea. Maybe those are some things that need to be worked on down the road. Just over a grand, over a grand and a half for anti-union mailing from West Virginia, right to work for less. Shoot, Robin, says Scott, that wouldn't cover 38 seconds worth of unionized sex workers and blow at their next strategy session. Well, you can bet your ass that when the Right to Work for Less committee gets together, they make sure that they don't hire no organized, unionized sex workers, because that there is what you call communism. I wish this wasn't so easy. But Jesus, it's true. So, you know, you got the right to work for less people. You got the Kochs. And then you got then you got that other bastion of right-wing, low-wage conservatism. The Club for Growth, or the Club for Growths. Tumors? No, the Club for Growth, it's a rock-ribbed Republican organization that supports conservative causes, low wages, repressive politics, that sort of thing. And in what is turning into a nasty little internecine battle in Ohio, well, the Club for Growth endorsed neo-maxi Zoom Dweeby Republican Senate hopeful Josh Mandel. On the other hand, well, TFG, the former guy, Genghis Khan, Nitwit Nero, he endorsed that fake hillbilly, J.D. Vance, the guy that wrote Hillbilly Eulogy, the latest installment in right-wing screeds about what's wrong with the hillbillies. Well, over at the New York Times, Maggie Haberman said that that Genghis Khan fully expected that the Club for Growth would take its marching orders from him. But they didn't. Instead, the Club for Growth paid money to various media outlets to run a new spot that Nitwit Nero didn't like. Because the spot that the Club for Growth made and aired was a series of quotes from J.D. Vance that were actually made by J.D. Vance, and that's why we call them quotes, in which he said really true things about Nitwit Nero. True things that Nitwit Nero didn't like that. And according to Maggie Haberman, he got rather testy about it, telling one of his evil little minions down at Mar-a-Lardass to tell the Club for Growth, "Go fuck yourself! Go fuck yourself!" Ms. Haberman reported that the Club for Growth informed the former Orange God Emperor last week, before he even endorsed J.D. Vance, and let's see. I'm trying to help Arnold get the stream here. Because we're still having trouble with getting a stream out on White Rose. So, gosh, up in Ahia, I hope it doesn't hurt too little. And may Josh Vandel and J.D. Vance, I don't know, I think the best way to sort this out is a steel cage death match. Motorcycles, morning stars, flit guns at 20 paces.
Tell them to go fuck themselves.
Lee and Ron and Raleigh both told me in 1995 the ILGWU merged with the Amalgamated Clothing and Textile Workers to form a new union, the Union of Needle Trades, Industrial and Textile Employees. Tough to make a song about that. Yeah, you know, you're right. So they, the Union of Needle Trades, Industrial and Textile Employees spells UNITE. And then in 2004, Lee adds, they merged with the Hotel Employees and Restaurant Employees Union here to form UNITE here. And then in 2009, most of the apparel and laundry workers split off and formed something else called Workers United. And they then affiliated with the Service Employees International Union. So thanks to the Raleigh, North Carolina, and East Coast Horn Ad Hoc Research Departments. Stephen New York says, right to work, etc. Perhaps I've missed it, but I've often wondered why unions don't frame it as a Democratic, anti-democratic issue. Union shops are union shops because a majority of the workers voted to make it a union shop. They do. But the, the messaging then has to be done. And honest to God, the right to starve people can spend $100 for every penny that the unions spend. It's part of that overall fallacy with Citizens United, it puts everybody on an equal playing field. Everybody has a voice, but if money is speech, then whoever has the most money has the most speech. Guess who's got the most money? Shh, I know. So, you know, that. But they are beginning to go after each other. Nitwit Nero is fighting a multi-front, there's a couple of military rules out there, long-standing. Never split your forces and never fight a two-front war. Apparently, even Vladdy Daddy figured that one out, because mostly he pulled out from his failed attack on Kyiv and is focusing all of his efforts on the final slaughter of Mariupol and the, what he considers Western Front, but Ukraine considers the Eastern Front in Donetsk and Luhansk and, you know, the Donbass. Well, it's Nitwit Nero is being forced to fight a two-front war, maybe more than two. On the one hand, in Ahia, he is, as previously noted, fighting the Club for Growth. Meanwhile, down in Florida, the home of Mar-a-Lardass, well, his former campaign pettifogger, Jenna Ellis, who now, I guess, has some sort of a grift as a fully funded right-wing radio blatherer of some sort, she's decided to go after Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis. And, of course, her heart is still with Nitwit Nero. Because, as noted in the editorial cartoon that Lady B sent along, Florida has gone to war with the House of Mouse. Doesn't that just sound silly? Well, only because it is. They voted in the Florida legislature, 23-16, to take away Disney's self-governing status because Disney, who has a lot of employees who are from the LGBTQQIA+ community or are allies thereof, didn't like the notion of that they were part of a corporation that couldn't find enough stomach to speak up against blatant acts of disgusting discrimination in the form of Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis's pet don't say gay law. Well, according to Newsweek, Jenna Ellis, trying to have her cake and eat it too, said,
as much as I disagree with Disney's corporate statement, they have a right to speak and support or not support legislation without government consequences. Their customers have a right to react with their dollars. DeSantis is over the line here.
Because the problem here is that Nitwit Nero thought that Ron Monkey Up was his guy. Now it turns out that Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis appears to be thinking that, well, Genghis Khan's race is run, his sun has set, and that he is the heir apparent to all that sweet, 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 sweet maggot cash. And by the way, we were talking yesterday. I was talking with Scott. It was Newsmuck who posted the graphic that showed little Neo Maxi Zoom Dweeby Ben Shapiro as being a heroic black conservative. I just love that. Well, Jenna Ellis also works over at Newsmuck. And she went on to say, you know, what would happen if California Governor Gavin Newsom took action against Chick-fil-A?
The Constitution is clear.
Again, I hope it doesn't hurt too little. Armed with his trusty Sharpie, Trump will show us all he's as skilled a political tactician as he is an AMS-certified meteorologist in his two-front war, says Scott, hearkening back to the days when he tried to fix a hurricane map.
Why can't we just bomb the hurricane? We could drop a nuke in the middle of the hurricane, and it looks like a target anyway.
And I'm going to get shit for this. Every time I do my cheap, cheesy, dumb Nitwit Nero voice, I still hear a combination of Carl the Assistant Greenskeeper in Caddyshack and Bubbles from Trailer Park Boys. Can't help it.
Oh, come on, Jack. Let's just knock over your Coinstar.
A third war maxim, Steve in New York says, as Vizzini said, never start a land war in Asia. You know, or Ukraine. I don't think Vizzini said that, but if they did a reboot, he probably would. Oh, and this is a fun one. Seeing as how the Republicans have such a conniption over voter fraud, and that's their excuse, hearkening back to a couple of nights ago when Paul from Parts Unknown was talking about, you know, issue number one, being making sure that we can actually freaking vote. And I agree with him in large part there. Well, they use voter fraud as a reason to suppress votes in any number of maggot states. Enter former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, who says that he is now a resident of the state of South Carolina, stand for good. because the state of North Carolina, which he actually represented in Congress before he went to work for Nitwit Nero, the state of North Carolina removed him from its voter rolls because Mark Meadows went and voted in North Carolina. No, the Old Dominion, Virginia. Yes. So the Macon County Board of Elections in North Carolina took Mark Meadows off of its voter rolls because he, violated state law because he also registered and voted in Virginia. What is voter fraud? The Board of Elections director, Melanie Tebow, not T-E-B-O-E, like the former football player with the flip-floppy and verse eye black. No. T-H-I-B-A-U-L-T. French. Board of Elections Director Melanie Tebow of Macon County, North Carolina, said, "What I found was that he was also registered in the state of Virginia, and he voted in a 2021 election. The last election he voted in Macon County was in 2020. And so then, with inquiry being made of Mark Insurrectionist Meadows in the Post and Courier, a South Carolina paper, well, he told the Post and Courier, "I ain't a resident of neither state. I'm a resident of South Carolina. I live here for good." And that apparently means he lives in Sunset, South Carolina, Stan, where a member of the South Carolina Elections Commission said, "Yeah, he's sure enough registered to vote in South Carolina." Just remember, everybody, this is all so easy to sort out. I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. Or I-O-K-I-Y-A-M. It's okay if you're a Republican. It's okay if you're a maggot. So he won't have to worry about maybe being prosecuted for voter fraud, even though he registered to vote in two separate states. He's trying to find, you get the idea that he's trying to find a state that might actually be cooperative in his efforts to, well, I don't know, maybe stay out of prison. Because at this point in time, being registered in, to vote in two states at once, it looks like it's only the tip of the iceberg. Busy, busy, busy. So, speaking of all these maggot states, there was a hilarious op-ed piece in USA Today the other day. "I'm going to Florida so Governor Ron DeSantis can keep my kids safe from woke math textbooks." Rex Hupke wrote it. "Like most reasonable Americans, I'm considering moving to Florida to keep my children safe from math. Ron DeSantis, governor of the Sunshine, unless it illuminates something we don't want people to see, state, has taken a bold stand against fiendish liberal attempts to use math textbooks to transform young American students into woke and genderless soy children." Jesus, really? "The Florida Department of Education announced Friday that it has rejected more than 50 math textbooks because they included nation-destroying concepts like critical race theory and social-emotional learning. The department's statement carried the headline, 'Florida rejects publishers' attempts to indoctrinate students.'
I don't know what critical race theory or social emotional learning are, but because I've been told they're dangerous and I'm afraid if I Google them, I'll turn into a lib. But thank goodness DeSantis' education officials caught those textbooks in time before any students were allowed to learn something. Florida is real.
I can't figure out the whole pecking order in maggot states thing. Because now Florida appears to be chasing Alabama, Mississippi, and South Carolina trying to get stupider. I don't know. Oh, and speaking of stupider, remember stupider? Stu Peters?
You know, the fact that we've got a Stu, we got a right wing hate babbler named Stu Peters in the very same week that we were talking about Tucker Carlson and his testicle toasting. Stu Peters toast testicles. There we go. Sure. Why not? Stu Peters, is putting out a documentary of his own, and it came out earlier this week. Don't bother. I mean, it'll be like putting an ice pick through your brain. But he put out a documentary called Watch the Water. Mandrake, did you ever wonder why I only drink rainwater and grain alcohol? Purity of essence, Mandrake. Yeah, Watch the Water and Stupiders works the right-wing conspiracy side corner of the street. And he's got a new theory. And I absolutely love this one.
I don't know. He may have just been drinking the lighter fluid straight from the can, you know, lift up the little nozzle and just squirt it in the back of your throat and yum, yum. Tastes like the stuff great-grandpappy used to make.
But Stupiders has figured out where the Rona came from.
No, really.
It's a beautiful thing. I really cannot emphasize enough the necessity of the hockey puck and the duct tape on this one. I almost feel bad about this because, well, I know I've lost a couple of IQ points listening to this. If I suddenly start doing nothing more than repeating Lewis Carroll's Jabberwocky, you'll understand why, but you'll be doing it with me.
Because really, I mean, there's Latin in this and everything.
Hold on, because this is, well, I mean, it's something.
The Latin definition historically for virus, originally and historically, virus meant and means venom. So I started to wonder, well, what about the name Corona? Does it have a Latin definition or a definition at all? So I actually,
yeah, it means beer sold in clear glass bottles that gets funky real fast.
No, I don't think that's where it's going. So we're start Latin virus means venom.
By the time this clip is done, the moldering ashes of Aristotle, Archimedes, All of those old Athenian graybeards will probably be in space on the other side of the planet. Virus? V-I-R? Vir means man? As in viral, but virus, what?
I actually looked up what's the definition, and on dictionary.com it brings up 13 definitions.
Of corona.
Corona, religiously, ecclesiastically, means gold ribbon at the base of a mitre. And I didn't know what a mitre was.
Well, a mitre box, it's, oh, never mind.
it's the Pope's House of Whoville hat. Now, the funny part is, when he goes to talk about how that's the gold ribbon at the base of a mitre, he doesn't know how dictionaries work. It starts with the most typical definition and works its way down through several more. And he was down around number 11 or 12 when he got to corona, the gold ribbon at the base of a mitre, and it says, in ecclesiastical usage, in church usage, which is, curiously enough, not science usage. The coronavirus is called the coronavirus because of what it resembles. I mean, they could as easily have called it the XJL19723.141, whatever. But, you know, even scientists like to work with the art of word knowing. And so they did. But that's not enough for stupiders. Because he does research with the Google.
So I copied it and pasted it and then hit images.
And there he is. Pope Frank. Wearing a mitre. Imagine the mentality you have for this to make sense to you.
So this actually could read the Pope's Venom Pandemic.
Catholics. Mm-hmm. Whore of Babylon.
It also can read crown. Corona means crown also in Latin terms. Corona means crown. Visually we see kings represented with a crown symbol.
Yeah, and margarine represented with a crown symbol, and beer represented with a crown symbol. And of course, apparently stupiders can read words on a screen, so that's what corona means, crown, because Latin. But it is not always a an indication of royalty. Since he wants to talk about Latin so badly, let's talk about a Latin award. It was called the Corona Civica, or the Corona Civica. And one recipient of the Corona Civica was Gaius Julius Caesar. It was some altercation either in Greece or Asia Minor, somewhere like that. But a young Julius Caesar said, "Screw it," and went over the walls of the town, kind of hoping his comrades would follow behind him. And for that act of bravery, he was given the Corona Civica, the civic crown. And there were rules that came with the civic crown. Among other things, on public occasions, and when he entered the Senate, he was allowed to wear the Corona Civica, and everybody had to walk up to him and say, "Gosh, Gaius, that's a really cool Corona Civica you've got there." And he got to say, "Yes, it is, isn't it?" And you know what the Corona Civica was? It was an award that soldiers gave out. And some Roman soldier sat there and wove a corona out of leaves. That's why those sorts of coronas are typically, well, we talk about, I think Scott mentioned it last night, you know, laurels. Well, laurels are leaves. we take that in English to, and we say, you know, well, Blazing Saddles, I present to you a Laurel and Hardy handshake. Laurel and Hardy, get it? See? Funny. But, you know, the state flower of West Virginia is rhododendron, which is often referred to in other states as mountain laurel. There's a part of, I think, Pennsylvania that's referred to as the Laurel Highlands. But it's... But when you're stupiders, it means something ever so much more nefarious than all of that. And once again, we say what we always wind up saying in these situations. Yeah, this guy's running a hustle, and he's going to make some money selling his stupid documentary or whatever. But it's the people who don't have what we just talked about for the last few minutes, who lack that fundamental basic level of understanding, who will, you know, Emery and Marvelline sitting there in their matching Barca loungers at the Ballerina Swan Lake Country Club and Trailer Park, who will take all of this in with absolute wide bug-eyed innocence. It's the Pope. Emery, it's the Pope. They was right, you know. Brother Whackbottom down to the Baptist Tabernacle was right all along. Them Catholics really are out to take over the world. And, you know, I'm funning and clowning around, but there is an anti-Catholic bias on display here. And it's old as it's as old as intra-Christian hatred itself. Meanwhile, mitre, the Catholic dictionary says it's a golden muffler guaranteed for the life of your Pope mobile, but only on Fridays during Lent. For the rest of the year, it's nonstop novenas for you, bub.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Earl Scheib. The only color we have here is Robin's Egg Blue. And it's only $99.95. Can't paint over it, and you can't, and it won't come off. So wait, Robin, says Lady B. Oh, we're not done, Lady B. You may have written prematurely. So wait, Robin, this clown went through 6 or 7 definitions of the word corona, found what he wanted, and pieced together some bullshit religious meaning? Seriously? Like you said, they named it corona after the shape they saw under a fucking microscope. There's no esoteric meaning. You'd have to be high to sit there and analyze shit like that. You know, like, why do we call our hands hands, dude, kind of shit. Fuck that clown, that is all. Why is there air? Wasn't that a George Carlin bit about getting high? Why is there, or was that Bill Cosby talking about kids? Can't remember.
So put that together for me. King
Cobra
Venom. It actually could read King Cobra Venom Pandemic.
Wait, cobras? There's cobras involved now? Is it Cobra Kai? Or wait. India. Oh, God. This is just breathtaking in the breadth of its stupidity. Why is there air? That was Cosby. Thank you, Scott. You and I, how much rock gut tequila would we have to drink for any of this to make sense? Would we probably pass out before that happened? Eesh.
I've said this for about a year now, that I actually believe this is more of a religious war on the entire world. I've been adamant about that, actually. The message of Christ forever was, he's the master healer. And faith precedes all miracles, not vaccines.
He made a blind man see.
Right.
He touched the leper.
So why are we actually putting more faith in drugs, and why is a man of the cloth supposedly putting more faith in science and a drug than he is in telling people to pray to God. God's greatest creation was you.
You know, until he created the coronavirus and you got it and you got horizontally crucified and then you died, you being about a million Americans. That stupiders is not happy enough having seen die of their stupider. He wants more dead. But wait till you find out where the Cobra business comes from.
And you are made up of a DNA strand of genetics that are unique to you. If I was going to do something incredibly evil, how ironic would it be that the Catholic Church or whoever...
Yeah, or whoever. That's right-wing code for the Jews!
Would use the one symbol of an animal that represents evil in all religion, which is...
Wait. What?
It's either the snake or the dragon, which is actually just a snake with legs.
Because those exist, snakes with legs. Whoop! But Cobra... No, all religions do not despise snakes. Ancient Greece, it was not uncommon for them to have a house snake. And a bowl of milk would be left at a crack in the wall for the house snake to come and drink. Or then there is, of course, the cobra, who, as Siddhartha Gautama, who would become known as the Buddha, as he sat in the withering South Asian sun, roasting, recognizing his Buddha nature, a great, humongous, giant cobra, deadly as fuck, slithered over, got up behind the Buddha, pulled up in its majestic cobra-ness, and spread its vast hood to shield the Buddha from the blazing, killing rays of the Indian sun. And, of course, myth has it that that is why it has that marking on its hood when it is fully extended. There's nothing evil about that. It is revered. Yeah, but that's Buddhism. Jesus didn't like no cobras. Were there cobras in ancient Palestine? I don't know. But it's fun going through stuff like this because we know the truth, we know reality, we know facts, we know history, and we know that everybody that is meant to see this doesn't know any of it. The Corona Civica? Billable Rick says, we know that Gaius Julius Caesar was awarded the Corona Civica for his bravery in the Battle of Mytilene in 80 BC. I want to know if the Roman Senate also awarded Caesar a Honda Civica. Went a long way for that, Billable. You went a long way for that. But I have to respect the journey. See, that was before Honda and Toyota split up in the ancient world. It was during one of the shogunates, I'm pretty sure.
You take that snake or that serpent, and you figure out how to isolate genes from that serpent.
Now, how in God's name is a serpent going to wear genes? How is it genes if it doesn't have two legs? I mean, at that point, isn't it just a serpent condom?
Never mind.
and get those genes of that serpent to insert itself into your God-given created DNA?
Oh, wait a minute. We got serpent insertions now. You know, I'm guessing Stupiders is just the kind of guy that Tucker Carlson was aiming his testicle toasting at.
I think this is the plan all along, was to get the serpents, the evil ones' DNA, into your God-created DNA. And they figured out how to do it with this mRNA technology. They're using mRNA, which is mRNA extracted from, I believe, the king cobra venom.
Notice he believes. He believes that the mRNA is extracted from king cobra venom. He doesn't think it. He says it outright. He believes it. And, you know, it might be kind of fun to microdose a little bit and just sit and ponder the other things that Stupiders believes.
The king cobra venom. And I think they want to get that venom inside of you and make you a hybrid of Satan, no longer just belonging to God or a creation of God's.
Satan. And I'm a hybrid. That means when I hit the brakes, I generate energy. Somewhere, there's got to be a Hollywood screenwriter who's working on Dr. Strangelove 2.0, in which the successor in interest to General Jack D. Ripper is worried about King Cobra venom being inserted into our... This blithering idiot probably can't spell mRNA if you spot him the M, the R, and the N. Yes, I know it's also that. It's also the nerve-packed portion of the male anatomy. While I'm lingering below the male navel, Scott says, trying to drive this program into the gutter, Cobra is also the brand name of a male enhancement supplement. If this twerp spent less time charming his serpent and picked up an effing book, he might learn something. Yeah, I was thinking about that too. Darlene in Connecticut says, what's the deal with the soothingly lame background music? To soften the blow of what Stupiders is revealing? Can I blame Bill for doing away with the fairness doctrine? Perhaps not. I know. Well, the tinkling piano in the background with a little bit of, I don't know, subsonic synthesizer, it's supposed to sort of settle you into the idea that you're receiving some kind of stupendous wisdom. Best I can figure. Oh, well. Yeah, Arthur says, Doctor makes excellent points, but I don't think he appreciates just what a bitch it is to extract the Satan DNA. All you gotta do is say his name 3 times, Arthur. And so we are rapidly approaching the halfway point of the program this evening. We have $1,500 for a fundraising goal, and a $25 Little Blue Bentley challenge on the table, courtesy of Jeffrey and Joey Jr. I don't know what Joey 2 the Kangaroo was up to this evening. Maybe watching Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. Don't do it, Joey 2. Don't do it. But, you know, this is the kind of... this is the kind of thing that has gotten us to where we are. This is the dumbing down of America. Because while you would never sit down and actually, well, that's as much time as you would ever waste on just because you're tuned into this program. But people sit and watch the whole thing. Who was it we were talking? Oh, yeah, the guy who murdered his wife and children because he got eyebrows deep into David Icke. Next thing you know, children are dying. This is how that happens. It is a form of stochastic terrorism. Somewhere out there, there's somebody that's going to watch that dumbass documentary and who knows, try to, go murder a pharmacist or something. It wouldn't be the first time that happened. A guy in Maryland, remember the story? But every now and then we get a win. Bloomberg News reporting that a slim majority of the Supreme Court refused to step in when an Air Force Reserve officer who had been sacked from his command sued because he wouldn't get the COVID-19 vaccine for, wait for it, religious reasons. You know, the same kind of religious reasons that Stupiders was talking about, or at least plausibly. Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Dunn was trying to keep from being shunted into the individual ready reserve, because if you're in the individual ready reserve, you don't go to drills, and more importantly, you don't get paid. It was actually a 6-3 decision. The usual suspects, Ann's boy Neil, Sammy Bad Breath Alito, and come on, you know who the other one is. That's right, Pubes on the Coke Can Slappy Thomas, all said that they would have let this numbnuts case into the Supreme Court. That means that Brat and Amy COVID Barrett actually got one right. Whew. Well, even a blind hog finds an acorn now and then, Robin. But the reason I bring this up after the Stupiders clip is because in his pleadings before the Supreme Court of the United States, no, Lieutenant Colonel Dunn did not say that it was good that the vaccine would sap him of his precious bodily fluids, but he got awfully damn close. He said that this vaccine, which has saved God alone knows how many millions of lives, is a religious ritual required as a condition of participating fully in society. It's got little tiny 666s floating around in it right next to the 5G receptacles for Bill Gates' insidious 5G plan to control all of our minds and incorporate us into the Microsoft operating system of the future. Okay, I added, but this is a real quote. I need to be clearer about that when I start funning. It's a religious ritual required as a condition of participating fully in society. You know this fucker has a southern accent. He has to. Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Dunn. Now, I've been involved in organizations that had rituals. And I've seen a couple of Catholic masses and an Episcopalian one or two. And, you know, there's incense stenching and bells ringing and hand clapping and facing east and Bible kissing and robes and secret handshakes and special door knocks and secret whispered passwords. Kumquat. So I understand ritual a little bit. I've memorized entire portions of rituals. I've also received 3 doses, two of the original and 1 booster. I still got to get my 2nd booster of the coronavirus vaccine. The first 2 shots I got at the old National Guard Armory in Oak Hill. Filled out my paperwork. Turned in my paperwork. Sat in a folding chair for a while with my mask on. Then they called my name, and I walked out into the old gymnasium, and they led me to a chair, and I rolled my sleeve up, and they wiped my arm down with an alcohol swab, and then they jammed a needle in my arm. It was a really fine needle, didn't really feel it go in, and it squeezed the stuff in, and that's a ritual? Because, you know, a ritual has to have you got to say everything right or you have to start all over again. My daddy plays dominoes better than your daddy plays dominoes, you know, that kind of thing. Or the magic doesn't work, because religious ritual is, oh, here's another phrase from last night, spell casting. So this clown is going to go to, and this is the depressing part of it, this clown is going to go to the individual ready reserve and not get paid because he wouldn't get the goddamn vaccine. Because he's an idiot. We do all know how he voted, right? Or votes. I wonder if he gets one of those special Air Force officer hats with the propeller on the top. Zzz! But the problem is he's still going to be in the individual ready reserve. When he probably shouldn't be any nearer anything even remotely dangerous than can be separated from him with a really, really soft wall. COVID religious issues. Jeremy in Vermont says, what if these crazy folks are all right? LMAO, what's going to happen to us all when Bill's mandatory update to the injection barcodes comes down through the blue Jewish space lasers and loses all our settings and things like dogs and cats living together will happen? Oops, I'm too late. I know. Keeps me awake at night. All them barcodes, all them little 666s, and what happens if, how do the 666s know they're 666s and not 999s? And if they're 999s, does that mean that dead Herb Cain is in charge of your DNA now? Do you have a hankering for Godfather's Pizza? We have our fun, but this is terrifying. Because as we've said so many times before, they walk among us. God Almighty, they walk among us. Oh, and by the way, I was reminded of this earlier. Wait, what's this? What's this? Hot tips on Julius Caesar from Macquarie, Ancient History, Last Chance. I can't open it, Billable. Must be a dandy, though. But Jeremy mentioned something a little bit ago. The traitor ex-General Flynn is at it again, speaking of cuckoo bananas birds. He gave an interview to some bizarre right-wing website, which Mr. Meth Pillow then posted to his website, because Mike Flynn has found himself a tasty little grift. In the video, The Absolute Truth with Emerald Robinson. And Emerald Robinson is a telegenic young woman who's interviewing the traitor Mike Flynn on a split screen. He is introduced for the first time to the fact that Patriot Malcolm Nance went to Ukraine to fight against fascism and support democracy. Flynn's reaction is extremely telling. At first, he struggles for a line of attack. Is he fighting for a fascist dictator? Or is he fighting for communism? Flynn, by the way, hates Malcolm Nance, as his interviewer Emerald Robinson mentions, because Malcolm Nance was, along with Sarah Kendzior, Timothy Snyder, and a few others, way ahead of the story about how Russia is assaulting American democracy. Sarah Kendzior is absolutely brilliant, by the way. Flynn can't help but wish for Malcolm's death out loud, and even points out how he's dressed and says Malcolm Nance could be killed soon. Well, it's not going to happen to the traitor Mike Flynn, because he's not going to get anywhere near any shots fired in anger. God, these people. On and on and on. You're trying to, nope, there's no way not to. Jude says, Siddhartha, ah yes, the cobra's gift. Including also, Robin, the visual conveyed when Siddhartha's mother was ready to birth him, went into a warm, focused forest where she stretched her body, suspending her weight by her arms from a limb on a banyan tree, if I remember correctly. All the while, with melodic, distant tones expressing, seeking her oneness with the enclosed sacred being. It's told that the infant instantly evolved into a toddler as each of Siddhartha's bare feet stepped, a lotus flower bloomed. Grateful for the quieting reminder, and you're referencing the Buddha. Well, birthing in the ancient world often took place with the mother holding onto a rope or a tree limb, and hopefully someone down there to catch the baby. It was problematic if the baby was breech, or if the cord was, say, wrapped around baby's neck. Let's see. No, we're going to have to spend more time in Florida. I'm sorry. Kind of can't get around it. Oh well. This is, of course, some bizarre. Oh no, let's do that story first. Via Agence France-Presse, because sometimes these stories just sort of dovetail. Remember when we had, was it earlier this week? The audio of the caterwauling Christians at 30,000 feet. And somebody in the Horn Family Community Congregation immediately referenced John Belushi in Animal House, taking the guitar and smashing it into the wall. And we sort of pondered, you know, how would we deal with something like this if we were in a metal tube 30,000 feet above mean sea level and this kind of annoying, God-bothering broke out with us? Well, it didn't take very long for the universe to provide an answer. They, and I don't see why they wouldn't, they let Mike Tyson get on airplanes. He was getting ready to fly out of SFO, and this one guy, I don't know why I'm thinking of Chris Farley. Hey, you're Mike Tyson. You remember that time when you bit Evander Holyfield's ear off? You remember that? I don't know that that happened, but they were getting ready to take off. They were in the plane, and the guy behind him was sitting there nattering away at Mike Tyson. It was all caught on cell phone video, because of course it was.
This is George talking to Mike Tyson, bro. This shit crazy, bro. Mike Tyson. My dog done got lit, man. He over here rapping with Tyson. Mike Tyson trying to give us some shrooms. He don't know how to act. Tyson looking out, man. This shit crazy.
To be fair, Mike Tyson is minding his own business. And this little dude behind him, you know, stands up, leans over, talks into his ear.
That I never gave you his money.
Peasants. They're peasants. Never mind.
Hey, Mike, come on.
And the smacking you heard was Mike Tyson standing up, turning around, and repeatedly punching the guy who was annoying the living bejesus out of him in the face. Oh, where are the God-botherers when you need them? They could have prayed and sung a song to Mike Tyson. One person said, Tyson had enough of the guy behind him talking in his ear and told him to chill, and the guy didn't. That's when the witness says Tyson started to throw several punches at the man's face. I don't think they were thrown at his face. I think they were thrown into his face. And, of course, this annoying little dude bro will forever be able to say, hey, Mike Tyson punched the shit out of me. Hey, are you the guy that Mike Tyson punched the shit out of him and beat him about the head and shoulders and face? Yep, that's me. Because what happens is the little smartass, I guess he's on the plane, in the plane, with a couple of his buds. And he just happens to be sitting behind Mike Tyson, and that's when he leans over and looks at his buds who are, you know, his pals are the ones videoing him. And says, peasants, peasants. And then Mike Tyson turns around and beats the shit out of him. He was nice to the guy at first, Mike Tyson was. But the little jackass wouldn't quit needling him. And is this... Oh, I don't want to open this can of worms. Don't do it, Robin. Don't. You know, don't start nothing, won't be nothing. Mess with the bull, you get the horns. Play stupid games, win stupid prizes. Those are all phrases that we have for people who idiotically do things that no normal human being of even marginal intelligence would ever do. But then again, Merca. And so this young shitbird is going to get is getting his 15 minutes of fame, and I don't know, 60 years from now, he'll be sitting around the Thanksgiving table, and all the great-grandchildren will be like, oh no, he's going to tell the Mike Tyson story again. And he will. It won't exactly be like the St. Crispin's Day speech from Henry V. Then will the proud man pull up his sleeve and show his scars and say, these wounds had I with Harry the King on St. Crispin's Day. But it'll be just like that to the little asshat dude bro. And I hope I'm not being perceived as condoning violence. I'm not. But to quote Carl Malden from those long ago American Express traveler's check ads, what will you do? What will you do? Yeah, also known, Jeremy points out, as White Dude versus Tyson's Fist, also known as Fuck Around and Find Out. And I don't fully understand why it's happening right now, but it does seem to be more pronounced than it has been in years past, decades past. Issues of basic decent behavior and manners. And we are becoming... Oh, this sounds so preachy. We are becoming decidedly incivil. No Corona Civica for you, little Neo-Maxi Zoom dweeby dude. I mean, okay, we had a previous Caddyshack reference. This little kid, this kid, because I don't think he could have been much past 20. I doubt if he was even 25. Mike Tyson is a 55-year-old full-grown man, former heavyweight champion of the world. And he didn't have enough upbringing, weren't raised right. I don't know. But you got millionaires slapping another millionaire. You got this. Is it because we've got a generation? We've had a generation now of get off my lawn, of reality TV that glorifies and not so much glorifies, but normalizes this kind of crap. I would be interested to see if anybody has any theories on this. But yeah, let's go ahead and check in North Dakota. Hi John, hi Kirk. So in today's edition of the Forum of Fargo-Moorhead, there was a story about Ray Holmberg. What was it, yesterday we were talking about the Herbster down in Nebraska, Stan? And his gropey-gropey, disgusting behavior with young women? Well, Ray Holmberg is the longest-serving Republican in the North Dakota State Senate, and he's decided that it's time for him to hand over the reins to the Legislative Management Committee, and he also lawyered up, because a report came out that suggested that Senator Holmberg exchanged about 72 texts with a, somebody call Q, okay? Somebody tell Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cue Ball about this. And Ron Monkey up Duclantis. He exchanged 72 texts with a, no kidding, pedophile. Now, Ray Holmberg, this is creepy, used to be a school counselor. And he's decided he doesn't want to run for, doesn't want to run for office again. Because back on April 15th, a reporter by the name of April Baumgarten published a story about a guy who has been imprisoned on charges stemming from child pornography. He was texting with 34-year-old Nicholas James Morgan DeRozier. And said, I don't have that phone no more. Wrong accent, I know. And lawyered up with a criminal defense guy. The aforementioned Nicholas James Morgan DeRozier is facing charges of receiving and distributing child porn. Somebody tell the 3X Marsha, would you? Possessing child porn, transporting minors with intent for those children to engage in sexual activity, and traveling with intent to engage in illicit sexual activity. What do you exchange 72 text messages with that guy about? Well, according to Ray Holmberg, they were about, quote, a variety of things. And I didn't even know that he was facing charges at the time. I mean, we were just talking about North Dakota stuff. How do you get your number there, Ray? I'm sure that Triple X Marsha will be. She won't give a shit. Because Ray Holmberg's a Republican. Hey, groomers, pedophiles, which takes us back to Florida. And seeking at least a little bit of the spotlight, because Ron Monkey Up Duclantis is hogging so damn much of it. The lieutenant governor of Florida, well, is desperate to get in on a little bit of that tasty Republican attention. Lieutenant Governor Jeanette Nunez, invited to come and appear on Newsmuck, immediately displayed her undying loyalty to the cue ball cause of protecting children from exploitation.
The future of other corporations. I don't think that anyone that is watching this program would agree that one corporation in the state of Florida should be treated differently compared to others that are in the same industry.
Now, Lieutenant Governor, I read somewhere that this, in effect, would cost Disney, I read, tens of billions of dollars. I just can't imagine they're willing to do that to their shareholders. Is there an opportunity for Disney to change their mind and say, we will disregard this whole woke agenda, we'll go back to what we originally dealt with, the state of...
Wait. Is the Newsmuck dude actually trying to find a way out for Disney? Can't it step away from the woke abyss? You know, this Disney business is older than most people may realize. I'm so old, and I'm such a long time listener to Malloy that I can remember way back, and I'm pretty sure it was before the horn even got started. The good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian Republicans were having hissies way back at the beginning of the century and before, because Disney had, at the time, what were called gay days at Disney, Disney gay days. And they welcomed members of the LGBTQ, etc. community to come and enjoy the Magic Kingdom. And I forget who the divine was. No, not that divine. Who was having a hissy, but I remember that Malloy got him on the phone and pretended to be a batshit crazy right-wing homophobe just like the pastor was. And the pastor was eaten out of his hand. And if I recall correctly, at some point in time, Malloy said to him something like, "You know what, Pastor, I just want to kiss you." Oh, my God. Somewhere there's a Best of Malloy reel that has that on it. And it was for the ages. But this... I'm trying to make the point that this is all just recycling. When they started having hissies over, I mean, we're talking about 1964, 1965, and Lyndon Johnson saying, you know, we've lost the South for a generation over the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. And as soon, and you know, they really didn't give up, they just repurposed. But as soon as the Republicans figured out they had lost that, they had to find another back to fundraise on. And Scott was talking about Richard Viguerie and direct mail and all that crap going back to 1964. It just keeps getting recycled, recycled, recycled into other marginalized groups. So, a couple of decades ago, they were waging war on the gay community, largely. They're groomers and pedophiles! Oh my God, the sweetness and the kindness and the goodness that is Disney! And the gays want to ride on the teacups. They're going to be a defiling Cinderella's castle! Oh, fuck off. Space Mountain! Oh no! And so now, in 2022, you've got the lieutenant governor of Florida, Stan, and she's still working off the same script. Context is everything. An understanding of the ebb and flow of history means so much.
To Florida, and would the governor then say, okay, fine, you keep your status, but let's talk about, we're going to keep an eye on you now. How does this play out for Disney? A lot of people like Disney, and they don't want to not like Disney anymore.
Sure, and of course, you know, we all have been to Disney, right? Those of us that have small kids, it's always a great time when you take your kids to Disney, but clearly they have changed their mantra. They have changed what they really espouse, and that used to be family values, it used to be entertainment that was age appropriate, and now they have, based on their own admission, a very not so secret agenda to indoctrinate our youth with topics that are very inappropriate. Sexualizing children at a young age is never okay.
And just how are they doing that? Wait, is this because there are finally some characters of color in the otherwise white, wonderful world of Disney? Is this because, I don't know, Moana doesn't look like... What? Snow White? Did they ever actually sit down and watch Snow White? That animated classic is a little creepy. A little girl gets poisoned after going off to live with a bunch of short miners? M-I-N-E-R-S? Is anybody here paying attention? Not saying that... Elsa singing Let It Go? Which has become kind of an anthem? Ariel? Who it turns out is an undersea hoarder? It's almost like they've, it's almost like, you know, Lieutenant Governor Mommy Jeanette Nunez stuck the DVD in the machine and walked away and left the TV to babysit her precious pumpkins. Oh, wait. I mean, really? Beauty and the Beast? The pervy candlestick? Who has the hots for the French maid? How many tropes do... Wait, I may be hurting Disney here. I don't want to.
And so Disney, of course, like anyone, has the opportunity to petition the legislature next year and to make the argument as to why they need this particular privilege, this district that they are allowed to create in their own self-governing. But I will tell you, I think that once you start to look at these things, this was passed in 1967. Maybe it made sense then. Does it make sense now? That'll be something that the legislature will have to decide. Is it in the best interest of Floridians first and foremost, which is what the governor and I have said? We want to make sure that we're protecting the interests of Floridians, not necessarily of woke corporations that take their marching orders from Burbank, California executives that have a very public agenda to indoctrinate our children. So we'll see. Obviously, the being able to spare yourselves from the horrors of going before a building department at the county government is something I'm sure they would love to keep. So I suspect that they will come with an army of lobbyists explaining why this is important, and they'll have their day. Obviously, the legislature will decide, and at that point, the governor will decide what to do as well. But clearly, for today, the governor has made it very clear. He is going to sign the legislation, and we're going to start on an even playing field for all of our companies.
Because QAnon. And by the way, you know how Republicans used to campaign all the time? Well, the tax and spend Democrats are going to... Well, because of what, because of the fit that the Florida legislature has thrown... And with the complete and total connivance of Monkey Up Duclantis, well, $2 billion of debt, working out to about $2,200 per family, is going to land on people in the Orlando area. And all... to appease the kind of people who think Matt Gaetz and Ron DeSantis and Marjorie Trader Gangrene Q-Ball and Clanny Oakley are patriots. Yeah, to make them happy. Note coming in from Matt in San Francisco. Assholes. After 30-plus years in retail, I can tell you that uncivilized people have always been in our midst. We just didn't have iPhones to document their stupidity. Having said that, I do think that 45 installed in them, or instilled in them, a sense of pride. So now they love to be on display. Continuing, Matt does, it's been a while, I'll admit, since I watched a Disney movie, but I'm pretty sure the song was Let It Go, not I'm a Ho. Ho. What are these people watching? I don't know. I might modify the question, Matt, and say, what are these people on while they're watching? Lady B says, I read a headline where many of the people who were banned from flying certain airlines will now be welcomed back because money. That boy on that plane at SFO was playing with fire. You don't fuck with the former heavyweight champion of the world, not even for a piece of gum. You tell him he's the greatest, maybe get a selfie, and shut the fuck up. I think Mike's money is good enough for that airline to keep him as a passenger. As far as that youngster who thought he would impress his friends, the internet remembers. Forever. If that clown doesn't succeed in making himself infertile. Yeah, there's a reason it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. And there's a good chance someone that stupid will. I hope his grandkids snicker at him every time he eats his cream of wheat and it dribbles down his face. Lord, yes. Thank you, Lady B. No. Well, this brings things into a little bit tighter focus. Billable Rick says, did you know that the twerp who was haranguing Mike Tyson is one of the stars of the new movie Jackass Forever? You know, the movie where people win stupid prizes for doing stupid things. I did not know that. So it's kind of a setup. And it all makes perfect sense. Jeremy, meanwhile, in Vermont, says, we did have an ex-president who, at his Klan rallies, told the police as they were removing demonstrators or people who disagreed with Trump to
take their coats in cold climates and, you know, rough them up a bit, hit their head a little harder in the sea as they put them in the cruiser. Don't worry. Beat the hell out of them. I'll pay your lawyer bills.
Arnold, really? Who doesn't want to bop Bell? Jesus. Jude noting, oh, Matt, you create laughter, and it's stated, laughter is the purest of sound vibration. Thanks, Jude. And so here we are. They're groomers and pedophiles. Meanwhile, the real groomers and real pedophiles are swapping text messages and are deep in the bowels of the Republican Party. But there is a serious angle to this. And by the way, I'll be going to the phones in a minute. And I haven't seen it, don't plan to, but Arnold says, some of the stuff in the new Jackass movie, if done to me, I would beat these people pretty severely. So it was publicity for a horrible movie that will cause other people to do stupid things. I think we really do need to have a more nuanced understanding of stochastic behavior. Not talking about making new laws or anything, but at least a more nuanced. I mean, Jackass is notorious for getting people to do stupid things. And even outside, again, remember the Tide Pod Challenge? Rest my case. So we've talked for a couple of days about this account over at Twitter called Libs of TikTok. And a person with some considerable expertise on the cue balls by the name of Mike Rothschild went on Twitter and said, I'm going to keep saying it, the grooming panic is quickly heading either toward a vulnerable young person taking their own life or someone being murdered. Might be a Disney employee. Might be a teacher. might be an LGBTQ parent. But it's coming. And he did this having seen a tweet from a guy named Matt Binder. Throwback to when libs of TikTok smeared a suicide prevention hotline for LGBTQ youth as grooming organization. They've deleted it since, but here it is. What kids were they protecting here? The Trevor Project is a grooming organization. Now, for those of you who don't know, the Trevor Project, among other things, maintains a 24/7 suicide hotline. And the Trevor Project's overarching mission is to try to keep little LGBTQ, QQIA plus kids from unaliving themselves. And they, you know, they've had the It Gets Better campaign. Yeah, this is rough. This sucks. But it gets better, and you can have a happy life. Well, Chaya Raichik is the principal behind Libs of TikTok. And among other things, she or someone affiliated with her attacked the Trevor Project as a grooming organization. They did that back on 16 November 2021. And sure enough, over at the Beckerheads site, The Blaze, some truly vulgar, filthy individual by the name of Elijah Schaefer decided it would be great media. Oh, God. Sometimes this shit's not good for me. But, well, I got the audio here. And let me just say, because sometimes I screw this up quite a bit. Let me just say that let me offer up a trigger warning, because I know that there are still closeted people in our community, and even perhaps closeted people like me. If this kind of stuff is harmful, go get a glass of iced tea or something. Because the shit that this Elijah Schaefer monster says in this minute and 42 second clip, I have a hard time conceiving, you know, what kind of parents he had, how he was raised, that you can say this kind of thing and never think a second thing about it.
Okay, so what are you talking about? He goes, the problem is that there is this mass genocide happening of trans kids from fascists. And I just said,
where?
Yeah, where? Listen to this. They go, well, in Texas, which I'm well aware, I live here. Yeah. So do you, I'm assuming.
Yeah, we all have to put a trans kid and drag him behind a truck.
Yeah. How many trans kids did you kill this week?
Six. They come with a toll tag.
We're 23 seconds into the clip. We drag trans kids behind trucks. I am so old that I can remember when a nationally known broadcaster lost his goddamn gig, finally, after a career of vicious ugliness that was passed off as, you know, edgy comedy. It was the day after the Grammys, back in the early 90s. And it was the year that Lauryn Hill won for The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. Pretty sure I'm accurate on all of this. And this asshole played a clip from the Grammy-winning album and then opened his microphone and said, and Jesus, I apologize. But it's a real thing that happened. He opened his microphone and said, "No wonder they drag them behind trucks. And Christ, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry." But he lost his goddamn job over it. Now, you just heard those 23 seconds of these two disgusting white dude bros giggling about murdering trans kids. You know what Glenn Beck's operation did? They edited it out for the clips that went up on Apple and Spotify. But they said in a disclaimer to the podcast afterward, "This is the part of the show where Elijah talks about things that he shouldn't have. It can't be on the main internet, but you can find it on blazetv.com for the full uncensored video." He actually said he was reprimanded and then made sure that the other disgusting white dude bros who watched this garbage knew where to go to get him to get to giggle about him talking about murdering trans kids. Welcome to free speech. Or at least the right-wing interpretation of it. And it goes on from there. "How many trans kids did you kill today?" "Six. They come with a toll tag. I did 4. I was trying to beat you this week." "Yeah, the Blaze ships us the better trans kids. You should really talk to them. I feel really cheated because I get, like, my Patriot Supply ads and stuff. Meanwhile, you get trans kids to genocide." "Ha, ha, 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 ha." "Yeah, Trans Kids Supply. Yeah, it's pretty good company. They come in a tackle box. It's like half a dozen. And you kill them any way you want. It's pretty good. Only in Texas, though. I didn't know that because I've been killing them everywhere, so I better stop." "Me too. I started in California. Let's talk about the Trail of Tears. I did version 2. Wow. Worked in some indigenous genocide to boot. They both still got jobs. They both still got jobs. How do we explain that? Do we have a better understanding of the meaning of freedom of speech now than we did back when they shit canned the grease man? I don't know. But that there is stochastic terrorism. I don't care how much they giggle about it. Because there's every possibility that one of the dude bros that listen to this shit will act on it. Just like Mike Rothschild said. "The grooming panic is quickly heading either toward a vulnerable young person taking their own life or someone being murdered. Might be a Disney employee, might be a teacher, might be an LGBTQ parent, but it's coming." I know parents who have found children who have unalived themselves. I can't imagine being so morally, ethically bankrupt and dead. Like those two Schaefer and Landau, those goddamn monsters. That I would find that fucking funny. But here we are. Here we fucking are. Let's, oh, by the way, we are 2 hours and 20 minutes into a program that is a goose egg with a $1,500 fundraising goal. Probably shouldn't even have mentioned it. But we are. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Robin. Well, see, here's the problem. First of all,
sorry to do that to you.
No, I've got a... Well, you primed my pump, believe it or not. I kind of, in a way, on one hand, I want to apologize to the repeat call, okay, for
don't,
the family.
Don't.
For the repeat call. But, you know, I don't want you all to think that I'm the only person out here in Radioland with a device that makes calls out, okay? Feel free to jump in. Don't leave it just to me, but that... Notwithstanding, I want to talk about the Disney thing.
Well, check me first, because you're a radio nerd like me. It was the Greaseman who did that, right?
Greaseman did a lot of stuff.
But no wonder they drag him behind trucks.
I think it was. Now the gentleman down in Texas, Mr. Hill or Mr. I forget his name, but I remember the incident well. I believe it was the Greaseman. Sometimes funny is not what you think is funny, and what some of your audience might think is funny is not actually funny.
Well, see, the problem there in that instance with the Greaseman was the fact that Texas had been recently dealing with the fact that a black man had been kidnapped, wrapped in chains, and dragged to death behind a goddamn truck.
James... somebody, and I cannot remember his name for reasons unknown to me.
Davis? Was it Davis?
I don't know. Somebody can look it up. But yes, a horrible thing not to be joked about. But I hardly know, because you got Disney going, and I want to mention that. You've got the guy on the plane, which we now find out is a bit for some stupid TV show that these people watch. Okay? But part of the problem with people doing that, if it's just been a civilian talking to a celebrity in that way, okay, behaving in that way in the presence of a celebrity, egging him on, okay, and he should have known better. But part of the problem, you can lay that, the cause of that, at the feet of the tangerine-tinted tub of toe cheese, Mr. Trump, because for 4 long years, plus the run-up to 2016, we had nonstop say whatever you want, regardless of who it might upset or offend or be unkind toward. Okay, so it's a monkey see monkey do sort of thing with those people. But now we find out it's a bit, and that's supposed to be all right. Well, that's not all right either. But that's not the main reason for the call. I wanted to talk about the Disney thing, but I also, something else you talked about that rang my chimes.
By the way, James Byrd Jr., say his name, James Byrd Jr.
James Byrd Jr., the late Mr. Byrd, who deserved way better.
Thank you, Matt in San Francisco.
Than what he got. But, first I'll talk about the Disney thing, because that just pissed me the fuck right off. I remember, and the governor of Florida is a twerp. He's an ass twerp, okay, which is the worst kind of twerp one can possibly be, all right? Because, first of all, some years ago, I saw a documentary about the history of Walt Disney World when it was in the planning stages back in the 30s, or I mean the 60s, when Walt Disney bought up a bunch of what seemed to be worthless swampland in the region of Orlando, okay? And Florida was on board from jump. They wanted the Magic Kingdom East to appear in the worthless swampland because the businesses and the communities on the way to Walt Disney World were going to benefit. And for that reason, they gave Disney a lot of tax advantages to bring the complex, bring the entertainment venue, bring the jobs, bring the revenues that would accrue as a result of it being there. Because what is Florida? I guess tourism is not the big deal in Florida that it once was. Now it's stupidity. They're exporting that by the fucking carload. Okay. But once upon a time, Florida was interested in people coming from somewhere else to spend their money there and hopefully have a good time. Well, that doesn't seem to be the fucking case with Disney. Okay. But the origin of Gay Day at Disney, according to that thing that I sent you, in 1991, a group of people, gay people, decided to organize an unofficial Gay and Lesbian Day at Walt Disney World for a small gathering of the local LGBT community to come out and visit the park together. Perfectly all right. Great way to spend the day, all right? So they picked a Saturday in June, probably because of Gay Pride. That's Gay Pride Month. But also, it was one of the slowest days of the year. And 20 years later, it became a thing. Well, now they've gotten their panties twisted into a Gordian knot over this in the right wing of Florida and elsewhere, making a buck with it besides, okay? And that was in 1991. Well, apparently, you were trying to think who the cleric was who got all upset about it. It took Pat Robertson until 1998 to start harping on it. Okay, so
well, but that wasn't again, that wasn't the divine that was on the phone with Malloy.
Oh no, but the divine who made a national issue out of it, one of them anyway, was Pat Robertson. And the thing about it is, I don't think Walt Disney would have a problem with it. I don't think his brother, whose name I forget, would have a problem with it. I don't think the Disney family have a problem with it. Because I know the West Coast Disney is the happiest place on earth, and so must be the East Coast version.
Well, didn't Disney's grandchild just recently come out as trans?
I don't know, but more
something makes more me power, think so.
More power to Disney's
grandchild.
Relations. Grandchild. But it just fries my fritters, Robin, when I hear this crap. And, oh, I know what the other thing was, so I will remember it for in a moment. It just bugs the hell out of me that Florida is not being called out even more vocally than it's currently being called out, because these people are ass twerps. They are ass twerps. And I would almost be willing to say, don't go. Unless they're going to be more hospitable, fuck them. Let them figure out a way, to make
sure. I want to travel down a tangent off of this, Scott.
All right. Okay. Well, go right ahead, you tangent traveler, you.
It ain't just Disney.
Oh, it's a lot.
It's the deafening silence of all the other humongous corporations that are headquartered in Florida. And they... These outfits that we have for years talked about the vast political power that they wield, especially in relationship to issues that matter to our side of the aisle, and they act relentlessly in their own best interest, but this comes along, and all of a sudden they are water bowel terrified.
And mute as a sphinx.
And as silent as a goddamn graven image.
Yeah.
I mean, again, what about universal theme parks? What about all the goddamn cruise lines? Okay, we're going to take our boats and we're going to dock them somewhere the hell else. Because we've got an LGBTQ, et cetera, community that floats our boats. and we don't want anything to do with you. Why are they so goddamn scared?
And I don't think it would be out of the question for employees at these various companies
to walk
to say, hey, wait a minute. You know, every company that I've ever worked for, pretty much every major company or whatever that I've ever worked for, has had a code, you know, a list of particulars that we all strive to abide by in order to give
mission statements.
Mission statements. To be a good corporate citizen and a good corporate employee and a good ambassador to the public you're supposed to be serving. And I really think that employees need to take a stand on this. You know, and companies, I mean, you think of, if it works at Disney World the way it works at Disneyland, not the rides, but the different booths where you can get different things like T-shirts and certain food items and things like that. Those are all tied in with corporate. I know Walt Disney, when he first had Disneyland, there was a Kodak franchise that I think Art Linkletter had some ownership in. The official film supplier and camera supplier of Walt Disney's Disneyland. Okay, these corporations who piggyback on companies like Disney and take the tourist buck need to be, you know, they need to be responsible corporate citizens in times like these. It's, again, which side are you on sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it's not that you're being an activist. You're just being a corporate citizen who knows that customers come in all shapes, sizes, and identities. And not let these corporations get away with, these other corporations get away with this shit. You know? It's just, I can't express how angry it makes me that you've got a governor who ought to be fucking governing and not legislating morality. Jesus, if we learn nothing from Prohibition, we should have learned that that's not the government's place. And I know why they do it, but it pisses me off nonetheless. I don't mean to be screeching, but do you get where I'm
away.
From? I mean, it's just astounding. In 2022, we're damn way halfway through the 22nd year, I guess, of this, you know, century or 19th year or 18th year. I don't know where we start the count from. That I'm not going to open that can of worms. But you get what I'm saying. We're this far along in the fucking timeline. Grow the hell up. Not you, but you know.
No, I understand.
And it's just maddening. It's just maddening. And they'll politicize this to their own electoral advantage. And we've got to show them that that tactic doesn't work, or at least won't work as well come the midterms and going forward to 2024.
Okay, fair enough, but let me... And understanding, of course, that when one has to be careful when playing the devil's advocate, lest one become the devil. You say we've got to show them in November 2022. What happens if they win?
Well, we didn't show them well enough.
Yeah, but I mean, what happened? I guess what I'm pointing toward is that if we think this is bad, we have not yet begun to fathom, to plumb the depths of awful that they have planned.
I know there's more in store unless we keep that from going that way, going that other way. Yeah, and that's how dire everything is. And as far as anything that you could say or play that's triggering, I have all the respect in the world and understanding in the world for people who are triggered, okay? But I also understand that sometimes you've got to say and do things, on our side at least, that serve a higher purpose. It may be unpleasant when the lesson is being pointed to on the blackboard, but the end result, hopefully, is making us stronger. Sometimes weakness can be an opportunity for strong strength to occur. That may be a Zen principle, and I don't even know it. Do you get what I mean?
No, I do. Well, okay, so have a sip of coffee. By the way, you made a promise. Did you keep it?
I forgot to.
Damn it.
I'm sorry. I'm half.
Nah, that's okay. I got that one coming.
I'll do it tomorrow.
You'll do it a year and a half from now. You know,
no,
just
I won't. No, I won't. And I'm not playing that game. I'm truly not.
Well, what I was saying, you know, I was going to say take a sip of coffee, Scott.
And calm the fuck down a little bit.
I didn't say that.
Well, you thought it, and I heard it.
But you know, we talked about the governor of Florida. And we had the clip from the lieutenant governor of Florida. Well, did you know that there's actually one, God, she must be lonely. There is one statewide official in the state of Florida who's actually a Democrat.
Well, good on her. I'll light a candle, keep her upright.
Her name is Nikki Freed, and she is the agriculture commissioner of the state of Florida, which is no small potatoes job in a place like Florida.
Oh no, definitely not.
You know, it's I'm not going to say anything because it'll get me in trouble with somebody who listens to the program wherever I mention.
You're not going to sing the Florida Sunshine Tree song, are you?
No.
I
remember Jimmy Buffett singing in what's the song, Manana, and I hope Anita Bryant never ever does one of my songs. Because again, I try to give historical perspective. What was Anita Bryant having a shit hemorrhage about, Scott?
Save our children, teachers in the classroom, grooming. They didn't call it that then, but proselytizing. What is the word when you try to get somebody to join up?
Recruiting. She was worried about gay recruiting.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. 78, 77.
Yeah. Because, but how times have changed, because she was the, you know, she'd been like Miss America, remember?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wholesome and all of that shit. And so the Florida Orange Growers Association,
yeah,
hired her to be the spokeswoman for Florida orange juice. And then she decided she was going to go on a jihad against gay people. And I know, there are members of the Horn Family Community Congregation who were, you know, in the midst of their young adult lives when this shit was going on. I was a kid, but I remember it.
Do you know where I was in February of 1978 or 7, whichever year it was?
Do tell.
Marching with the congregation and friends of Metropolitan Community Church in Washington, D.C., with snow halfway up our shins, marching up Connecticut Avenue. Hundreds of us, Robin, with candles, marching toward the Hilton Hotel up there where Reagan got shot, because she was the featured singer or entertainer or speaker at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention that year. And we showed up and we spoke out and froze our asses off. But we had a warm feeling in our hearts. Because we were
amen, together. And she got it. She got in deep shit because Matt in San Francisco knew exactly where I was going. Matt just said, "I volunteer. I'll throw a pie in DeSantis's face."
All right, there you go.
Because eventually, come Anita on. Bryant got a pie in the face for her homophobia, and she also.
And what did she say?
I mean, there was an outcry. There was a, you know, and the orange juice people didn't fare nearly as well as Jesus chicken would later, because this country in many ways, you know, there's been an expansion of rights, but in some ways there's been a contraction of decency. The more success that marginalized communities have made, the angrier the people who oppose those rights have become.
Yep.
And eventually, you know, it ended her gig. But the point that, so I wandered off the beaten path over, do you remember Anita Bryant? But again, shit's been going on.
Well,
so,
you know what she said when she got the pie to her face?
What?
As she was wiping her husband at the time, Bob Green, was helping her wipe the custard off of her face. She said, well, at least it was a fruit pie. You can find the book.
Oh, no, I know. Yeah, you had to. Yeah, you had to get another dig in. Yeah, it's kind of like those two monsters over at the Blaze working in a reference to the Trail of Tears.
Yeah.
Well, so again, off the beaten path, we're actually talking about Nikki Fried, the Democratic commissioner, agriculture commissioner of the state of Florida. Well, and maybe this will keep her in office. And the funny thing is the way that all this works out, it's kind of like, I'm not sure she's wrong. She just sued the Biden administration. A Democratic agriculture commissioner just sued the Biden administration.
Why?
Well, you're gonna have to sort through this because it's weird. Florida has a medical cannabis law. But
that's good.
Yes, it is. It is. At least they managed to make it real, as opposed to, you know, West Virginia, you know, still waiting.
Is this going to be one of them good news, bad news deals?
Yeah, it is.
Oh shit!
Sorry.
Go ahead.
So she sued the Biden administration over a rule that says because most of it's computerized, you know, you go to one of these big box stores that sells goons, and you go over to the computer and you fill out the firearms purchase thing, and you are told from jump you have to sign off that you are not addicted to alcohol or drugs, or have been committed to a behavioral health facility against your will.
Yeah.
And that's all done under penalty of perjury that can wind up, if they decide to come after you, they can wind up with you doing five big ones in the federal system. So here's the conundrum. If a conundrum it is indeed, and it is, because there are people in Florida who access medical cannabis, but also because America and because Florida like to buy guns. But they can't. Because it's not just addicted to, it's user of in these federal forms.
Yeah, that's where the problem is.
And so if you are a user of medical cannabis in Florida, you can neither purchase a gun nor get a concealed carry permit. Because in Florida, even though they've got stand your ground and all that other crazy shit, they haven't gotten around to, like, you know, what we do here, where if you're tall enough to reach the money onto the counter, you can buy a gun, buy some bullets, put the bullets in the gun, put the gun in your pocket, and walk away.
Yeah.
Florida doesn't have that yet, so you still got to get your concealed carry permit. And so if you use medical cannabis, and if you want to buy a pistol or get a concealed carry permit, but in particular the buy a pistol part, and I know there's a whole lot of people in this community who are like, well, I don't want no pistol. I'm there right there with you. But it is what it is. Second Amendment, bow down and worship. So you're filling out the form, and you really want the gun, but you use medical cannabis. So you click yes, you don't get to buy the gun.
Right.
You click so no, you're facing five biggins.
Perjury time.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, oddly enough, the Office of the Commissioner of Agriculture in the state of Florida is, God knows why, in charge of concealed carry permits. They also have significant jurisdiction over the growing of medical cannabis.
sometimes you just got to shoot them weeds, Robin.
I know. And so it sort of pits the office against itself from an internal standpoint. You know, having had a cup of coffee in law school, I can look at this and see where it's a problem. And so.
And meanwhile, you got your governor and your legislature down in the Sunshine State fiddle farting around with people's personal identities and personhood when they ought to be attending to shit like what's on the form.
Although right. But here's the problem. The shit that's on the form is federal.
Yeah.
And so there are 37 states that have legalized medical cannabis, even though the federal government still says that that cannabis, medical or otherwise, is a Schedule I controlled substance narcotic.
Absurd.
It is absurd.
Reefer madness.
And so she's in a position where she's kind of damned if she does and damned if she doesn't. But at the same time, when the way I ran across this story was somebody on Twitter saying, Nikki Fried has just come out as a Republican. And no, she hasn't. She's a Florida Democrat, which is not the same as and I'm sorry, I'm not picking on anybody, not the same thing as an Oregon Democrat or California Democrat or a Washington Democrat or a Massachusetts Democrat or a New York Democrat or a New Jersey Democrat.
Well, would it be a stretch to say she's painted into a corner due to circumstances beyond her control?
Yeah, she didn't. She didn't set up these federal regulations, and frankly, the federal regulation is fucking stupid. And so she has sued the Biden administration, claiming that it is a violation of Floridians' constitutional rights to not be able to smoke dope on a medical basis and have a gun. I'm gonna be one of those weird Democrats right now.
Yeah.
I have some sympathy for people who want to own guns because of where I live. You know, the 32 to 55 feral hogs in my front yard thing that got so much press a couple of years ago. But I have some sympathy. These things matter to people. There are gun-owning Democrats all over West Virginia. And, you know, to just sit there and make a blanket statement, all guns bad, is a dead loser here. You know, that's why Joe Manchin pinned the cap and trade bill to a goddamn tree and murdered it near the anniversary of the assassination of John Kennedy. The ad even showed the bill in the crosshairs of the goddamn scope. And he got reelected, and I know why. And if you live in Florida and you are afraid, I mean, Scary Jerry has called in and talked about the signs on the sidewalk. We have ammo, you know, for your AR-15. Hurry in. Won't be here long. And so consequently, there needs to be some resolution in this conflict of laws. And you know how the law is going to be, you know how it's going to be resolved? It's going to be resolved in favor of the guns, not the weed.
Well, that's the way it often is. I mean, in my lifetime.
Yeah.
You got me.
Well, Ron and Raleigh just wrote in and said, you know what's amazing? That smarmy shitheel in Florida is doing all this horrendous crap because he believes this is his path to the presidency of the United States. Are we that bad? Has the country devolved to this point? Yes and yes, Ron. I mean, as an aside to that, Scott, I had to be up early, so I turned on my filthy morning habit. There they were, talking about Democrats testing the waters, and who's going to run against Joe Biden. And they just started randomly throwing out, will Kamala Harris run against Joe Biden in 2024's primaries? Will it be Pete Buttigieg? And then I'm doing prep for the program. Bernie Sanders says he will not rule out a run in 2024. And I'm not gooning on any of them. I'm just thinking about what shitheel, awful politics that is, and even worse, media coverage.
Well, traditionally...
What is it that Joe Biden isn't doing that deserves to get his ass primaried?
Even with the Democrats, thinking back on it, traditionally, with rare exceptions, isn't it the case that if your party's person holds the office, you set that cycle out?
Well, that's the political wisdom, but the point that I'm reaching here eventually is that I'm so old, I remember Bill Bradley in 2000 running against Al Gore.
Well, I do too. I do too.
And what's more, I remember Edward M. Kennedy in 1980 running against Jimmy Carter.
Well, I remember that one too. But again, you're...
And I remember how both of those worked out. Do you?
I do too. But your question remains, and it needs to be responded to. What is Joe Biden doing or not doing that he could do or not do better?
Well, I'll give you the answer that came down from on high this morning. I forget which old white guy said it, but it was, well, you know, Joe Biden, he said he had his big Build Back Better program, and where'd that go? And he had this voting rights protection thing, and, well, where'd that go?
Where'd the wall go?
And but hold on, this was more clueless than the fucking wall.
Okay.
This degree of punditry, because the next line was, well, you know, young Americans see how he hasn't gotten anything done, and they're just going to sit this one out.
I sincerely hope.
And I try really hard not to be one of those old ladies who screams at their TV.
If you were packing, you could shoot the screen like Elvis used to.
Yeah, bring me a peanut butter and banana sandwich and the Elvis gun, son. I'm shooting the TV again.
Your 45 caliber remote.
But that's the state of the punditry. You know, and I've been talking about this. We've been talking about this since he was inaugurated.
I know.
You know, I didn't get a goddamn pony faction of the Democratic Party.
What did they run, about 3 hours every morning?
Oh, no, baby, they've gone to four.
Well, see, here's the problem, and this is the old Rush Limbaugh conundrum. When you have network time to that extent, and that number of eyeballs or ear holes hanging onto your every utterance, it behooves you to behave in a more righteous manner. Well, can we agree on that? I mean...
Yeah.
And that troubles the hell out of me. If I had an hour a day or 2 hours a day or whatever, I sure as hell wouldn't be taking the easy way out like these jokers do. That's why I don't watch that show anymore. I don't watch anything hardly anymore. I mean, I listen to this show and some other things, but, you know, if they're not serving in my interest, need, and necessity, then fuck them. They don't deserve my time as a viewer or a listener, you know? And you are not wrong to call it a filthy morning habit, because there's nothing informational or edifying about 3 or 4 hours of that crap day after day, week after week. I mean, if there's breaking news, yeah, you might want to tune in. But...
I know, and Lady B, who always has something fantastic to offer, her sense of perspective is tuned to a diamond drill bit's point, says, do some of y'all white folks remember all the fuss about political correctness? How you felt so oppressed because you actually had to think about the feelings of others before you opened your mouth to say whatever the fuck you used to say without suffering any consequences? Political correctness was a fucking godsend. It was created by white people for white people. Because it wasn't just about your fucking feelings and what you thought was funny. You needed to be taught to shut the fuck up. And for a while, it worked. I blame Rush Limbaugh and Howard Stern. I can't... God, Lady B. I can't believe I used to listen to those clowns. They started this shit. It was awful then and continues now. It's not funny to punch down. It's bullshit, and folks have killed themselves because of it. Christ almighty, every decade people try to drag us back into what they fondly remember as the good old days. Whites saying whatever they want, and the rest of us have to bite our tongues. Fuck you, no more. No more of this white Jesus don't say gay, make fun of minorities and LGBTQ folks bullshit. Grow the fuck up and mind your own. Our country is disintegrating right before our eyes, and DeSantis wants us to stop using the word gay, and some Floridians fucking agree with him. Jesus Christ. Okay, deep breath. Ooh. That's my last rant for the day. Y'all take it easy. Signed Lady B, P.S. The Horn family is good, kind, and loving. Keep the faith. Your compassion will pay off. God, I swear she's a bodhisattva.
Thank you, Lady B. Well, I see the old clock on the wall. Let me close on a positive note.
Oh, do.
And something that you said about young people reaching out for a friendly voice and a good, strong shoulder and an open ear made me go back to the early 70s when I volunteered for two organizations, the community switchboard in my hometown, where people could call in 24 hours a day and just vent if they needed to vent, cry if they needed to cry, and talk if they needed to talk. And the other one was in D.C. up by DuPont Circle, the gay switchboard. I used to volunteer there as well because I knew that there were people who needed what services like that have to offer. An open ear, a strong shoulder, and maybe good answers. And anybody in the Horn family who's never volunteered in that capacity, they're in today's world especially, even more so than back then in a lot of ways, there's a crying need for volunteers at community switchboards or special types of switchboards for certain groups, certain populations. And you'll find no better way other than this program to spend your time if that opportunity arises where you live. And you'll never know what a difference you can make in your own life, but more importantly, in the lives of people who are at a vulnerable place in life and just need a hand up and a little boost, you know, where you cup your hands together and they put a foot in and you get them over the wall.
Yep. Make a stirrup.
Yeah, a stirrup. So, you know, I know I rant and rave, and God knows with what's going on, it should not be surprising to anybody. I may need to call the crisis intervention place when I hang up from here and see if they talk me off the ledge. But I'm serious. That is a worthy thing if you ever have a chance to do it. It'll magnify your well-being and somebody else's. So there.
I think that's wonderful.
You'd be good at it, Robin, because you listen to me.
Well, no, you make me. I wonder if there's some way for me to try to give back a little bit that way.
Yeah, if you've got like a United Way sort of blanket umbrella organization. They probably know. And if they don't know, they can put you in touch with somebody who does know. And a lot of times that's what it was like. It was a referral sort of thing. We weren't there necessarily to give solutions to life's problem, although we could to an extent. But a lot of times we were not equipped to do that, but we had another number or another contact point to steer them toward for their particular situation.
You know, it kind of makes me wonder how the dear souls who field those calls on that LGBTQ hotline, how do they engage in self-care? Because that shit can't be easy.
Well, a lot of it has to do, some of it anyway, has to do with the other people on the staff. There's always a person who runs the thing. An administrator and an assistant administrator, and they do encourage you. I mean, you take it to heart to an extent because you're dealing with another human being's very life, and some of that does get internalized. And you're right; that is a consideration, and it's sort of like a checkup that they give you from time to time to make sure you're doing okay as a volunteer. You know, we don't only take care of the callers, but the listeners get taken care of as well, or should. But yeah, that's, I'm telling you, anybody, seriously, if you feel that you lean in that direction or would be good at it or have a willingness to find out how to do it, look into it, because in today's world, I'm telling you, as crazy as
there's a need, there's a need.
Things are even more crazy today, and even medium-sized towns have these sort of resources in today's world. That didn't used to be the case. I don't know what it's like where you are, but like your local community chest or United Way or Mental Health Association, whatever, will let you know if there's a way for you to volunteer if you're moved to do that.
That's powerful.
And I'm telling you, you get way more out of it than you ever give the person on the other end of the line.
Well, it is, and I thank you for that, Scott. I do. That does end us on an uplifting note. And
well, I wanted to do that.
I need to say some thank yous. I need to thank John and Arthur and Don in BC. Joey and Giraffe and Junior's challenge, the little blue Bentley challenge, was met. And so we knocked it down from 1,500 to 1,425 this evening. So that's profound. Tomorrow, for Friday on the Front Porch, we will be at 1,725. And that's actually more than a week's fundraising.
But thank you. That's a miracle working power.
Sincerely, though, thank you, John, and thank you, Arthur, and thank you so much, Don. Thank you for being there and keeping this from being a goose egg. Thank you. Scott, you are, as ever, trenchant and a jolly co-conversationist, and I appreciate it. Don't worry about two calls two nights in a row, okay?
Well, thank you. Like I say, you primed my pump, and I wouldn't ordinarily do it, but I just had to chime in.
I promise not to find another rabbit hole for us to go down, because I'm absolutely determined to see us make it to the end of April with all the shows on Podbean. Jeez, the things I have to worry about.
I like rabbits. We're going to see the rabbits. When are we going to see the rabbits?
Tell me about the rabbits, George. By the way, Nidia sent me a note because... justice, because karma. Nidia reminded me, Anita Bryant had a lesbian granddaughter.
Ain't the universe wonderful?
Yeah, it is.
Ain't God good?
And see, that's one of the things that all these sickening phobes don't understand. They sit there and stand there and they bray and they grunt and they howl and they shriek their hatred into the infinite universe. Oh no, it's finite, isn't it? But anyway, they do all that, never realizing that there's probably someone within their immediate family who is absolutely goddamned aching from the hate that spews forth from their vomitous gobs. And the greatest amount of damage they're doing is not to people that they don't know, but to people that they profess to love.
Yeah. And sometimes that can be a shifting circumstance. But we've heard horror stories of families where that doesn't happen, where the kid is sent packing for whatever reason.
Oh, I forget what crazy high number it is of kids who are on the street because they're loving parents can't stand the fact that they're lesbian or bi or gay or trans or queer.
Yeah. Or curious.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And so there, you know, there's a place for telling people that it gets better. And it's, you know, imagine, you know, as Randy Radar points out, the universe probably wasn't wonderful for, Anita Bryant's granddaughter, at least not at first. And nonetheless, you know, she prevailed. Well, she prevailed.
I would like to think that Anita has either mellowed or her heart has softened and she's taken a cue from the Lord himself.
Nah.
It works out better. It truly, truly does when you humble yourself and realize that you're not God, that the axis of the fucking universe doesn't go through your navel. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Scott, be good.
Robin, I am good. And I have affidavits from people who know so. So
absolutely.
Take
all right.
Care.
Maybe you'll be around for Friday on the front porch tomorrow.
Love you madly, Horn family.
Absolutely. And it comes back, and it comes back at you, Scott. Press down and shaking together.
Ooh, baby. Come on. See ya.
Later. And so that brings us to the end of the program. Hell of a thorn in the side Thursday, if you ask me. Thank you to each and every one of you who, through Patreon or PayPal, help keep all of this going. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging with the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve. Again, happy birthday, Steve. Go do something fun if you haven't already. Happy, happy birthday. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. HeadOn.live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way. 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And now, a union shop, this would be a great time to reach out to your member of the House of Representatives, please, and ask them to co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the AHEC Act. It means the world to Appalachia. And, of course, I really am. I got to get this done over the weekend at some point in time. Maybe tomorrow. I don't know. But I got to get my second booster. Y'all get yours. And, of course, wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Maintain your social distance. Wear that mask. Because, as we said a long time ago, that mask, it's an IQ test. Wearing it shows you have one. And, of course, if somebody comes towards you looking down at their phones because it looks like they're texting. You say, who are you texting, buddy? And he says, don't know, but I've sent 72 of them. Wait, he's a pedophile? Avoid that person like the plague. Because he is. And always. Gina, it's all for you. Later.